ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for animals and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Kaylee Martin, a vegan, cancer survivor, and founder of Cowgirls and Collard Greens. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The Statesman Journal reports that federal officials are proposing to kill half the large colony of cormorants in the Columbia River estuary because the large black seabirds eat too many young salmon and steelhead. The proposal is the preferred action in a draft management plan released by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The colony of double-crested cormorants on East Sand Island near the mouth of the Columbia River consumes about 11 million juvenile salmon per year as they migrate through the river to the Pacific Ocean. The fish are listed as endangered. Officials say despite reduction in nesting habitat, the cormorant population has continued to thrive. It has increased from about 100 breeding pairs in 1989 to about 15,000 breeding pairs today. That makes it the largest cormorant colony in western North America, representing over 40% of the region's cormorant population. Now federal officials are proposing to reduce the colony to 5,600 breeding pairs by killing half of them, trying to scare off the others and taking their eggs. Once the colony size is attained, the Corps also is proposing to modify the terrain of East Sand Island to inundate some nesting habitat. Double-crested cormorants are masters at diving to catch small fish. They are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and are native to the Columbia River. The public has through August 4th to comment on the cormorant plant. If you'd like to comment, please see the link at thestatesmanjournal.com.
I found it a little hard to stop eating shrimp when I went vegetarian 36 years ago. And I have to admit, I've cheated with shrimp a few times. Shrimp is the most popular seafood in the United States. 90% of the shrimp we eat has been imported, but less than 2% of that gets inspected by the U.S. regulatory agencies. Imported shrimp, more than any other seafood, has been found to be contaminated with banned chemicals, pesticides, and even cockroaches, and it skirts food safety authorities only to wind up on our plates. The number one reason for all that, the dirty conditions in which farmed shrimp are raised. According to a 2011 Government Accountability Office report, the Food and Drug Administration tested just 0.1% of imported seafood for chemical residues. Here's what the agency missed in that untested 99.9%. Banned antibiotics that have the potential to cause cancer? Recently, ABC News recruited scientists from Texas Tech University's Institute of Environmental and Human Health to test 30 samples of shrimp purchased from grocery stores for the presence of three classes of antibiotics. Two samples of farmed-raised shrimp from India and Thailand tested positive for several antibiotics known to cause cancer. Banned antibiotics aren't the only unwanted sides you get with imported shrimp. Previous tests have found penicillin, an antibiotic that could trigger allergic reactions in people. Imported farmed shrimp comes with a whole bevy of contaminants, antibiotics residues from chemicals used to clean pens, filth like mouse hair, rat hair, and pieces of insects. Salmonella and E. coli have been detected in imported shrimp. In fact, imported shrimp is so dirty that it accounts for 35% of all shipments of imported seafood that gets rejected due to filth, according to Food and Water Watch. More often than not, imported shrimp are raised in farms rather than caught wild. Shrimp farms, essentially huge underwater pens, are built along coastlines, and to make room for them, shrimp farmers have to destroy native mangrove forests that provide a buffer against hurricanes and flooding. Scientists from the U.S. Department of Agriculture have found that mangrove forests absorb and trap more climate-changing carbon dioxide than any other ecosystem on the planet, including rainforest. Yet, over the last 50 years, over half of the world's mangrove forests have been destroyed to make room for more coastal shrimp farms. Thank goodness there are vegan versions of shrimp and other seafood. I'm Greg Lawson, and I see food differently.
After thorough review of commercial breeders in Texas, the National Nonprofit Animal Legal Defense Fund, or ALDF, sent a formal letter to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, singling out the worst breeders, roadside zoos, and animal testing facilities, and demanding the agency enforce the law against violations of the Federal Animal Welfare Act. ALDF's review of the inspection records shows animal cruelty routinely goes unpunished, and the group urges the USDA to move suffering animals to reputable shelters where they can receive veterinary attention. Furthermore, ALDF's letter calls on the USDA to apply civil penalties and revoke the licenses of commercial dealers that have violated the AWA on multiple occasions, but not limited to breeding facilities failing to provide veterinary care to multiple dogs or providing safe housing and proper ventilation, a zoo that failed to provide veterinary care to an underweight camel or clean water for a hippopotamus, and an animal testing facility that failed to provide adequate veterinary care for several goats. ALDF's letter and a complete list of abusive breeders in Texas are available by request. To learn more, go to ALDF.org.
Stay with us. Coming up on the next segment of ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Kaylee Martin, cancer survivor, vegan, and operator of the website Cowgirls and Collard Greens. That's next on ACT Radio.
Joining us now on ACT Radio is Kaylee Martin. Thanks for joining us, Kaylee.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kaylee, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in vegetarian and veganism?
Absolutely, yeah. I loved animals from a very young age. I grew up here in Northern California in the Sierra Nevada foothills in a little town called Grass Valley. And I grew up with a single mom on a 5-acre farm with every farm animal you could ever imagine. And so my chores were taking care of the animals, and of course I wasn't in school, and my mom wanted to instill responsibility in both my sister and myself. And so we grew up taking care of animals and of course loving them just as pets. With the exception of of all of our pets, we had, you know, horses, dogs, cats, chickens, goats, ducks, bunnies, a sheep, 2 pigs, and a cow, and all of our animals were pets, with the exception of 2 of our pigs and our cow, who I graciously named Cupcake, our backyard cow. And one evening for dinner, I came home, I was in, 12 or so, and maybe the 6th grade, and my sister and my mom and I were at the dinner table, and my sister looked down at our steak for dinner, and she said, "Is this Cupcake?" That pretty much did it for me. I changed my ways at a very young age and made that connection about, you know, my love of animals and not wanting to eat them.
Wow.
So that's really where it started.
So you were vegetarian from your early teens, and then What kicked it off to go all the way to veganism?
Well, yeah, so I was probably preteen when I made that decision to cut out meat in my diet. And I was vegetarian for most of my life, I would say the larger portion of my life. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old. I was ironically living on my grandparents' cattle ranch in rural eastern Oklahoma, looking after them, caretaking for them, when I found a tumor in my breast. And I went and had it checked out, and it revealed that it was cancerous. I got that very scary call from the doctor saying you have cancer. Mm-hmm. A moment I will never forget. So immediately, in my frightened state, I turned to the internet because I was living in the middle of nowhere and didn't really have access to friends and family and the support that I needed. So I went to the internet and researched as much as I could. And I was already this crunchy granola type, if you will. I was shopping at health food stores from the time I was, you know, probably a teenager, attending Grateful Dead shows, and I always had that crunchy granola, you know, thing going on. So I did a bunch of research and found out through some alternative cancer films, really. One in particular that struck me and still today really resonates with me. It's a film called Crazy Sexy Cancer. And it's a documentary by a woman named Chris Carr, and she turned the camera on herself when she was diagnosed with a very rare cancer and filmed herself what it was like to go in and out of doctor's offices and get scans, and she was trying to figure out her diet. What should she eat after she has this really rare cancer that is inoperable, incurable? And she was the same age as me, which was very rare because I was sharing, as you can imagine, waiting rooms and such in oncology offices with people that were literally two times my age.
Right.
So I basically, like her, I put on my cowgirl boots and I said, giddy up, okay, let's do this. And I went vegan. And actually, within 2 or 3 months after going vegan, I attended raw and living foods school. It's called the Living Foods Institute in Atlanta, Georgia, and I became a raw vegan, actually, so really, really extreme in the middle of Oklahoma.
So how difficult or not difficult was it for you to make that transition?
I know for a lot of people, veganism is something that is a gradual process. You know, people cut out meat, and then they'll cut out dairy and eggs. And for me, because I was in a health crisis, after watching all these films, the one thing that they had in common, including Crazy Sexy Cancer, was to cut out meat, dairy, and eggs, animal products. And let me assure you all that I was eating a lot of cheese. I was, like, you know, fiending for my cheese. And I was also probably 30 pounds overweight at the time. I was sort of what I call a junk food vegetarian.
We know several of those.
You're familiar?
Yeah. French fries and cheese pizza.
Exactly. So I knew that this was an immediate concern, and I needed to take action right then and there. And so I became vegan overnight. And it wasn't until a few months later that I attended the Living Foods Institute that I went raw vegan, and stayed raw vegan for about a year and a half through my treatments and whatnot.
You know, I've always tried to include a lot of raw foods, but I love to cook, so it's a little difficult. And I don't buy into the whole raw thing philosophy anyway, but I think there's something to it.
Well, it sounded like it worked for you.
Well, in a way it did. I mean, so let's see. I was diagnosed in 2008, end of 2008, and 2009 was when I went completely raw. And I literally dropped 30 pounds, which seemed, you know, quickly overnight, and just fell off of me. I juiced greens like it was going out of style. I'd never knew of juicing greens. For instance, what was that? You know, and raw food, I didn't even know what that was.
It's weird that people don't know what raw food is. But it's a common, I've heard that before, and you're like, well, a lot of the food we see in the grocery store is raw.
Yeah.
But it doesn't dawn on people, though, at all.
Well, I was, in addition to raw, I was eating a lot of living food. So I was sprouting a lot of my lentils and things like that. And I mean, it was just a whole journey to learn about. I mean, I didn't even share with you guys. I still, to this day, I really am not a chef. I don't, being vegan, you'd think, oh, she's a cook or whatever. She's probably going to write a cookbook or something. Not true. I call myself vegan on the go. I eat out a lot. And so this whole process was, there was just so much to learn. And the food was just like one aspect of learning, how I was going to eat and treat my body. And I do just want to say that it wasn't really just about food. I learned a lot when I attended raw food school that the mind really had a lot to do with me.
Yeah.
Sort of healing myself. And they taught us a lot in school there. We had other treatments besides just learning about how to chop, blend, and dehydrate, and take wheatgrass shots. So it was really a process of me changing my thoughts and changing my mind.
And that's a good point, because it seems like, there's some people who get a terminal disease, or they get cancer or diabetes or whatever it might be, and then their response is to say, well, I want to live life to the fullest. And so they continue the lifestyle that got them sometimes into that predicament and eating bad, and especially people with diabetes, and then eating meat and alcohol or drinking alcohol. I think that's what's inspiring about your story is, you really, some people take the other approach, but you certainly went the more positive route.
Well, thank you so much. And ironically, my mom was diagnosed 3 months after I was, which a lot of people don't know. I'm not sure that I've shared that with you. And not to say anything bad about my mother, I love her dearly, but she did take a very different approach. And she kind of was like, eat dessert first. I don't know how long I'm going to be here. So there's probably something to be said for that approach too. But I feel like what I did certainly strengthened my mind and my spirit, and definitely my body. I mean, I dropped 30 pounds. My skin was glowing. I even literally had people stopping me on the street. At a number of occasions, strangers stopped me and said, "You're glowing. What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Well, it's not a pregnancy glow. I know that. So this is I juice kale for breakfast. What do you eat?" So that was always an interesting point. And people are like, "Kale? What's kale?" So I felt amazing that year. It was a big transformation, both physically and mentally. And really, 2009, that was the best year of my life. I took trips. I did an ice plunge. That was something interesting I never thought I'd do. I did a ropes course. I traveled. I really wasn't sure how long I was going to be around. And so in that sense, I did sort of live life to the fullest, but I did it helpfully.
Yeah, and the thing is like you said, is that the mind part is really important. I think a lot of people realize how important your attitude is when you're trying to fight off a disease.
Absolutely, yeah. I mentioned earlier about putting on my cowgirl boots, and I grew up on a farm, which I mentioned earlier as well, and I literally, as a child, ate, slept, and breathed horses. I was a cowgirl from the time I could climb onto a horse's back, and so I sort of use that as, like, metaphorically, if you will, I guess. I went back to my cowgirl roots, if you will, during this time. That's a really challenging time. And that's why I have a website that's a cowgirl-themed website, because I feel like I really pulled out that cowgirl spirit during this challenging time.
Well, I'm having kind of a hard time reconciling the Kyle girl and the crunchy granola.
I know. I get that a lot, or especially like the cowgirl. How can you be cowgirl and be vegan? Like, that's like an oxymoron, right? But it's possible, I promise. It is.
Well, and then Howard Lyman, of course, we've interviewed him on the show, and he's another person that can attest how just because you grew up in a certain environment that you can learn and you can realize that what you've been accustomed to doing for cultural and family purposes isn't always the best thing for your health or for animals or for the environment.
Absolutely. I would love to meet him someday. I'm familiar with his work. I know he's working on a film right now. And a lot of people, when they meet me or they hear my story and they learn about the cowgirl part, they always ask me if I know him or if I've met him. And I haven't yet. I have met a lot of vegans in the limelight, if you will, but I've yet to meet him. And I look forward to that day for sure.
Well, and before the show, I was looking to see if there was some cowgirl country western singers that are vegan, and I saw that Carrie Underwood is vegan.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and actually,
so you're not the only cowgirl.
Yeah, there are. They're out there. I think I have several of them that follow me, at least on social media, have reached out and said that they're vegan and they're cowgirl. So. Like I said,
see, you're setting
possible.
A new trend. It's great.
That's right. Let's hope it catches on in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I didn't know there were vegans in Texas. Austin. So
yeah, we didn't either.
But there are three in the studio right here now.
That's awesome. Yeehaw.
Yeah. So you founded Cowgirls and Collard Greens. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're hoping to accomplish through Cowgirls and Collard Greens.
Well, Cowgirls and Collard Greens got started because actually a guest who you've had on your show, Kristen Lajeunesse of Will Travel for Vegan Food.
Yeah.
I met her during her travels, and she actually spent the night at my house, and we kind of had a little full sister connection, and I met with her and we just kind of started talking, and I told her my story, and she said, you know, you really have something here. And so it was really like, again, an overnight thing. I kind of had been thinking I really wanted to do something. I wasn't really sure what it was. I really wanted to and was motivated to share my story to help others, really, and of course the animals as well. But she encouraged me to just sort of run with it. You know, she said, get going on this. Start before you're ready. You know, put up a website. You know, do this, do that. And I did. I don't even know how it happened. It just sort of came together with her help. She actually did coach me for about a year. We had phone conversations because she was all over the country, as I'm sure you all know. And so she coached me for about a year, and it's kind of just taken off. I write a vegan blog once a week, and it's mostly product reviews, restaurant reviews, just reviews on vegan-related events that I've attended, you know, Veg Fest and those sorts of things. Occasionally I throw a blog about cancer in there as well, but my hope is to perhaps be a consultant and or sort of a coach to newly diagnosed breast cancer patients, which is actually something I already do locally. I volunteer at our local hospital for a program that was started a few years ago just to help navigate women who are newly diagnosed and kind of don't know where to start or what doctors to use or, you know, sort of what will work for them. And so it would be awesome to get paid to do something like that. So that's perhaps something that will be happening in the future.
Great.
Yeah, I hope to maybe write a book too someday to tell my story. And they think that that's perhaps on the horizon as well.
I know a few people who have gone raw vegan or macrobiotic and have been survivors after a cancer diagnosis. It's not unusual. I think it's a very important step to take to eat right, not only for curing or preventing a relapse, but for cancer prevention. It's tough to say that a vegan diet can protect you from disease, but I really think it's true.
I support anyone, of course, who wants to take that route. One thing I do say when I meet with women who have been newly diagnosed is that, you know, I share my story with them in hopes that perhaps they might want to go that route. But really, our health is, you know, our own choice. And I can't tell anyone what they should do with their body. And so I do have a firm belief that plants, you know, help me personally through really tough time and through a health crisis. I did end up having some allopathic or Western medicine type of treatment. I had five surgeries. I went through four rounds of chemotherapy and 6 weeks of radiation. And what is sort of unique about my story is that I was never sick. during any of those treatments.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I really felt like being on a raw vegan diet and doing a number of other things which I haven't even imagined or listed here, rather, really, really helped me. I mean, when most people are in bed sick through chemo treatments or perhaps are going into the doctor to get a shot so they can go in the next day to get chemotherapy because their blood counts are down, you know, I was out hiking this year in Nevada, you know, and planting an organic garden. So I can't prove that it was plants, but yeah. I certainly feel in my heart of hearts that it was.
I'd like to mention, too, at this point, there's a great resource for anybody who's thinking about this or facing similar problems. The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has a large section on cancer treatment and prevention.
Yeah, there's an incredible amount of resources out there as well. I think for me, Chris Carr was really a launching pad, sort of, if you will. And,
yeah.
And I think her books, she has many of them, are a great resource.
That's true.
For anyone who's been diagnosed. And she's really, to me, living proof. I mean, she's, I think, 11 or 12 years out now, and she has an inoperable, incurable cancer. In other words, she can't have it operated on. She still has, I believe, 27 tumors on her lungs and liver, and she's alive. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Kaylee, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your work and hopefully, you know, be inspired to follow a similar path?
Absolutely, yeah. So my website is cowgirls, plural, cowgirlsandcollardgreens.com. And people can find an array of information, including my story there, you know, why I went vegan. I have some really great recipes. I have a weekly blog, which I manage myself. And then once a month, I invite guest bloggers to participate as well. So there's a wealth of information there.
We've been talking with Kaylee Martin of Cowgirls and Collard Greens. Thanks so much for being with us, Kaylee.
Thanks so much for having me. Giddy up and yeehaw, you guys.
Thank you, Kaylee.
Thanks,
Thank
Kaylee.
Thank you.
Be sure to visit Kaylee's website at cowgirlsandcollardgreens.com. If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. We have an exciting event coming up on July 12th. We'll be showing the movie Speciesism and a vegan dinner at Sunland Park Holiday Inn. To get more information about this event, please visit vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier environment, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.